Good morning. It's Friday, November 22nd. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, what countries are rich enough to pay for climate change? Why more people are cutting ties with family members? And Matt Gaetz withdraws from consideration for attorney general, and Trump taps a new nominee. But first, arrest warrants were issued yesterday by the International Criminal Court for Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the former defense minister Yoav Gallant. There was also a warrant for a leader in Hamas, Mohammed Daif, the military chief believed to be one of the masterminds of the October 7th attack on Israel that killed over 1,200 people and sparked the war in Gaza. In the warrants for Netanyahu and Gallant, the court's three-judge panel alleges that Israel used starvation as a method of warfare and intentionally targeted civilians in Gaza. Over 44,000 Palestinians have been killed in the war, and more than half are women and children. The court said that Israel's restrictions on aid and fuel and electricity cutoffs severely impacted the availability of water in Gaza and hospitals' ability to provide care. Israel vehemently denies all the allegations, with President Isaac Herzog calling the warrants outrageous. Netanyahu's office called them anti-Semitic. And the White House said in a statement that the U.S. rejects the ICC decision. BBC News correspondent Anna Holligan, who is based in The Hague, reports that the allegations focus on a roughly eight-month period of the war, between October 2023 and May 2024. And she says initially these warrants were kept secret.
One of the reasons why the ICC has released them now, they say, because they believe similar conduct may be ongoing and they consider it in the interests of victims and their families that they are made aware of the warrant's existence.
In fact, PBS spoke to aid workers in Gaza who say they are seeing what the ICC described in these warrants on the ground in Gaza today. Here's Arwa Damon with the International Network for Aid, Relief, and Assistance.
Look, this is my fourth time back in Gaza since this all began, and each time I leave, I think that it quite possibly could not get worse, and yet it somehow does. And the sense really is that Israel, from the onset, has been saying that its intention is not to collectively punish the population or to starve the population or to kill civilians, and yet that is exactly what we see happening on the ground.
The ICC relies on countries that have signed a statute to follow its jurisdiction. The U.S. and Israel are not signatories, but 124 other countries are. So for Netanyahu and Gallant, these warrants mean if they travel to one of those member countries, they could now be arrested. That includes the Netherlands, where the ICC is headquartered. The foreign minister there said in parliament yesterday that his government would cut off non-essential contact with Netanyahu and Gallant, and he said that both men will be arrested if they set foot in Dutch territory. The EU's foreign policy chief also said the treaty terms should be respected and implemented by member countries. But it is ultimately up to each member of the ICC to decide how to act. Here's how NPR explained it.
Some states might elect not to do that. Russian President Vladimir Putin is also wanted on an arrest warrant from the court for alleged crimes in Ukraine. And when he recently visited Mongolia, a member of the ICC, he was not arrested.
Putin, for the most part, has managed to work around his arrest warrant by inviting world leaders to come to Russia and by joining international meetings remotely by video. He and now Netanyahu and Gallant are members of a small group of world leaders sought by international bodies for trial. Others include Slobodan Milosevic and Nazis tried at Nuremberg after World War II. Sky News reporter Alistair Bunkel says the warrants for Netanyahu and Gallant could alter Israel's standing in the world. And they'll certainly change how history remembers these two leaders.
In terms of the reputation of Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, in terms of their legacy, they are now wanted suspects, wanted to be put on trial for war crimes. And it is a label that will never leave them.
Is rich enough to pay for climate change? That is one of the questions at the heart of this year's UN climate conference, COP29, which is set to end today in Azerbaijan. Grist reporter Jake Biddle told us everyone agrees that the world's richest countries should shoulder the costs of helping poorer countries. Those countries are disproportionately impacted by climate disasters. And everyone agrees this will cost trillions of dollars. From there, though, there are tons more questions.
Is China going to have to give money? Is Saudi Arabia going to have to give money? Is it going to go to decarbonize economies in the developing world? Is it going to go to protect against climate disasters? Is it, you know, going to go redress countries from disasters that have already occurred? Who's going to get it? Is it going to go to islands? Is it going to come in the form of grants? Is it going to come in the form of loans? So all this stuff is very much up in the air.
These countries are trying to answer all of these questions in a matter of days. At this stage, it's developing nations that have joined with China and India to demand that the US and Europe bear the brunt of these costs. Meanwhile, the US and Europe are looking for commitments from China and Saudi Arabia, two countries that were not officially considered developed by the UN when this climate conference was created decades ago, but whose economies have ballooned since then. The other challenge? With President-elect Donald Trump coming into the White House next year, what will America's participation in all of this look like? During Trump's first term, he pulled the U.S. out of the landmark Paris Agreement. He also stripped back the majority of money the U.S. had pledged to poorer nations. And Trump has vowed to exit the Paris Agreement again.
The U.S. has always a very, very influential role in these talks. They have experienced negotiators here who have been doing this forever. They're quite shrewd. But I don't think that, you know, the world is necessarily looking to them for the ambition that's going to be required to get this done, just because there's a certain lack of credibility that will attend to any big promise that they make, at least in the near term.
Still, Biddle told us that these talks are the world's best chance to turn things around.
You have a lot of countries, especially the least developed countries and the island states, who basically say, when the process is criticized, they basically say, look, this is the only forum we have really in the world to advocate for, you know, essentially the survival of like ourselves as sovereign states. There is really not an alternative at this point. And you need global cooperation in order to solve this problem. And as hard as these geopolitical fights are to have, I think, you know, we really have to have them every year, or else we're really not going to get anywhere, I think.
As we get ready for Thanksgiving, there are a growing number of Americans who may have at least one seat empty at their table. That's because more and more people are cutting ties with family members.
I haven't spoken to my stepfather in almost 10 years.
I've had to go non-contact with my mother.
Lots of things that attributed to me cutting him out of my life.
Intergenerational trauma.
A narcissist.
There was alcohol involved.
Politics or climate change.
Verbal abuse, some physical abuse.
It has created fissures in my family that are beyond repair.
Those are just some of the calls that we received when we asked you for your stories of family estrangement. We were really overwhelmed with the responses, a sign of just how common this has become. So the question is, why is this happening? Here's what Joshua Coleman, a psychologist who specializes in family estrangement, told us.
Over the past 3 or 4 decades, there's been this enormous expansion over what we label as harmful, abusive, traumatizing, neglectful behavior.
Coleman says this is especially true in the child-parent relationship.
A lot of these parents will say, emotional abuse, what are you talking about? I gave you a childhood I would have killed to have. In many cases, that's true. It just doesn't really matter if the child grew up feeling emotionally abused or has learned in therapy that the parent's behavior should be labeled as emotionally abusive or abusive in any other way. That's their psychology and that's their reality.
Coleman in part blames his own field for contributing to the high number of estrangements we're seeing.
I am a therapist and think that in large part our field does enormous good. But I do think that therapists have become what the sociologist Alison Pugh refers to as detachment brokers, which means that therapists often help people to not feel guilty, you know, or bad about cutting off family members that in prior generations would have considered, in other cultures would have considered to be the wrong thing to do. And are we happier? I mean, we have record high rates of mental illness in this country and loneliness and atomization and social isolation. And no, we don't seem to be a lot happier. So it's not really working, is it?
Coleman is this week's guest on Apple News in Conversation. He offers tips on how these relationships can be repaired and acknowledges that there are certainly some that are simply beyond repair. To hear more listener stories and Coleman's expert advice to navigate these challenges, check out this week's episode of Apple News in Conversation. If you're listening in the news app, it's queued up to play for you right after this episode. Before we let you go, a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app. Former Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz withdrew his name for consideration for Attorney General on Thursday. He had been trying to rally support among senators this week for confirmation, all while his nomination drew renewed focus to allegations that Gaetz had sex with a minor, which he denies. In a statement about why he dropped out, Gaetz said, quote, "It is clear that my confirmation was unfairly becoming a distraction." To replace him as AG, Trump nominated Pam Bondi, the former attorney general of Florida, who also represented him in his first impeachment trial. Now to a major shakeup in education. MIT is making tuition free for students whose families earn less than $200,000 annually, beginning next fall. The school says most American households meet that threshold. And for students whose family income is below $100,000, the university says it'll pay for basically everything: tuition, housing, food, stipends for books, and more. Now, tuition alone costs almost $58,000 in the 2022 to 2023 school year, higher than the average for other private schools. The university says this new financial aid is coming from alumni and friends of MIT. And finally, in entertainment, part one of the movie adaptation of the Broadway sensation Wicked opens in theaters today. Now, I don't know about you, but I've been seeing ads for this movie everywhere. So we called up Constance Grady, a senior culture correspondent at Fox and a Wicked expert, to understand why there is so much hype.
It's based off of such a beloved property. Wicked is the fourth longest running show on Broadway ever. It's made over $5 billion in its lifetime. So the hope is that this movie will appeal to people who saw Wicked on Broadway 20 years ago and want to take their kids now, and also to people who never saw it but listened to the cast recording over and over and over again and want to finally put some images to the words.
You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app, you can stick around for Shamita's full interview with Joshua Coleman. That episode of Apple News In Conversation is queued up to play for you next. And before we let you go, a quick programming note. Apple News Today will be off next week for Thanksgiving. Enjoy the holiday, and we'll be back with the news on Monday, December 2nd.